The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And today it is a compilation with three different export managers from three excellent wineries, all from the northern white wine region of Rueda, which is in Spain. It's about an hour or so north of Madrid. And the grape is Verdejo, and all these wines, 100% Verdejo. And one of the themes of this podcast is beyond trying to make wine more fun and more interesting and just less intimidating, is every now and then I want to open people's eyes to different wine regions and to try grapes or things that maybe they haven't tried before. Tom Seaver, a famous pitcher for the New York Mets, Hall of Famer, he passed away a couple of weeks ago as when this is released, when this podcast is released. After he was done baseball, he was really into wine, and he purchased land in California and started making wine. And one of my favorite quotes from him was he said, "Wine is like food. I don't want to eat the same thing every night. So when I go to the wine store, I will pick out 12 different bottles of wine and try them all. Hopefully not on the same night. But the point is I love that spirit. It's like, I'm going to try new things, new regions, new grapes, whatever it is, open my eyes. That's the great thing about wine is there's hundreds and hundreds of options. You'll never actually drink them all. And that's why I love doing work with Dio Rueda. And I've done work with them before, and I am getting compensated. I feel I'll be honest about it. I don't think it's a big deal. I'm not getting paid much. I won't call myself an influencer. I don't have the body of a Kardashian. But the great thing is I wanted to bring attention to a region that I think needs more attention because these are really good wines. This is really good white wine. It's not that expensive. And you can get certain bottles of this. That's only like $14-15. And you can age it for 5 years and it will change in a dramatic fashion, in an impressive fashion, and a lot more depth to it. But this is a region that has a lot of range because you get young wines, but you also get ones, Verdejo, that has grown on 100-year-old vines. And the depth, the complexity, the spice, the herb, the fennel, but still all the stone fruit, it's all there. So if you're looking for a different wine to try, this is a great region. It's going to be three interviews. And the first one with Luis Garcia. And also, I want to apologize. There's going to be some weird cuts with the second and the third interview where it stops abruptly. Then I pick it back up again. There was a lot of technical issues. I was doing all the interviews in one day. I'm going to blame it on I was up in my cottage. There was technical issues. I was trying to work with Zoom, with Skype, and I'll blame Acer, my computer, and of course, my own feeble brain when it comes to technology. So apologies for that. I did the best I can with the audio quality. It took me a while. Some of it might be a little bit tricky to hear, but you'll get like 95% of it. And all three individuals, I appreciate them taking the time. Before I forget, a reminder. Master Somm Bruce Wallner on September 22nd. He's going to be doing an educational online wine class on September 22nd. So highly recommend. It's easy to seek out and find, but he's going to be teaching you all about Dio Rueda. And then on October 5th, Angela Aiello. She is a wine educator. She's been in wine forever. She taught me way back in the day when she was doing these like wine classes. And this is, I'm going back like 15 years ago. Anyway, she's got a wine night Instagram live thing coming up on October 5th. Also talking about all things the grape, Verdejo, the region, Rueda, and highly recommend these two people. Great educators. So anyway, I'm going to cut in or out every now and then just to give a little bridge between the different interviews. Here is the first one with Luis Garcia from Bodega Emilia. Luis, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So first, I was wondering if you could tell people a little bit of what you do with the Bodega.
So I'm the export director. I'm in charge of the sales of the winery worldwide. We have a team. Where that they serve different areas, and I kind of oversee it. I've been there for 10 years, so I've been little by little improving my position, and nowadays I take care of the wall.
I was reading, doing a little bit of research, that you worked a bunch of harvests as a grape quality controller in the Ribera del Douro. How does working like in the harvest, working with the grapes, How does that help you do your job now?
Well, that was when I was very young. The first year I did it, I was like 19 or something like that. And I did it for like 3-4 years. And it was my first experience with wine other than drinking it. So it gave me a foundation to understand the winemaking process and the grapes, learning a lot about the different plagues, diseases, and problems that the grape can have. Also to learn a lot about how the appellations of origin work in Spain, because a lot of people doesn't know the regulations and the strict control that there is for every single grape that gets into a winery to be considered part of the appellations, to be able to have that little back label on the lower back part of the bottle. It's not easy, you know. The grape has to be perfect. The yields have to be the approved yields. So it's it was a very interesting experience.
What are some of the things you have to do to pass whatever tests through the government? What does your winery have to do to make sure you get that sticker, that of authenticity for your wine?
I mean, each appellation has their own regulations, but all of them have in common several things. One of them is when the grape arrives to the winery during harvest, the person that does the job that I was doing back in that day measures the degree, the level of sugar, so that way you can see the potential alcohol. And there is a range that is allowed. So if the grape doesn't reach it, or if it's too high, it cannot go into the winery. You can, you know, sell it for maybe to do like generic wine of Spain or whatever, but it cannot be from the VO. Also, another thing that is very controlled in that job is the diseases, that there is no botrytis or mildew or any of the other diseases of the grape. And also the yield. There is also a maximum yield per hectare. So each winery can only bring the amount of grapes according to that yield. So if a winery tries to reach the limit of yield and brings more grapes, those grapes are disqualified automatically, and the same, they have to go somewhere else. They cannot be used for Dio Rueda or Dio Ribera or any other Dio.
If we could stick on yield for 1 second, because I think it's, for people who don't know, it's one of the most important things for the quality of the wine when you have a maximum, you know, there is a maximum yield of grapes that are allowed to be used. I was wondering if you could tell the listeners a little bit about the connection between maximum yield and the quality of wine.
You know, that the reason why the maximum yield is controlled by the appellations in Spain is because to prevent wineries or growers to overproduce. It's very easy to make the grapes huge and getting a lot of grapes from each vine. You know, nowadays there's a lot of waste doing it, but that is bad for the quality of the grape, the concentration of aromas, of flavors, everything is less, is lost if you get the bigger grapes or more grapes per vineyard. So there has to be a balance, and you know, in every deal they control the deal. So you have to make sure that the quantity of grapes, the size of the grape, is the correct one to keep the quality, to keep the concentration of aromas, of flavors, and the proportion between the skin and pulp. All those things are very, very important if you want to produce high quality wines.
Love to hear first a little bit about your winery, about the history of it, and where it sort of fits in with Rueda.
So Amina, our winery in Rueda, is part of a family. The owner, Carlos Moro, is originally from the Ribera del Duero area. His family were growers there for several generations, and he started with a winery there that is called Mata Romera, which is the name of the main company. It's Bodegas Familiares Mata Romera. Then we have several wineries in different appellations. We started in Ribera, and from there we grew to other appellations surrounding the Duero River. Duero River is more known for the Ribera del Duero, but the Duero River also crosses Rueda or crosses other appellations like Toro or Cigales. So we have wineries in each of those in each of those areas. And lately, in the last few years, we have also expanded a little bit further and go to some appellations outside of Castilla y León. But Rueda was one of our first wineries because, you know, as you know, Ribera del Duero, Toro, or Cigales, other areas where we are all red wines oriented. And we wanted to also produce high quality white wines. And we thought that Rueda was the perfect place to do it. So we established our winery in Rueda in the year 2005. Our first winery is from the early 90s, and in 2005 we started in Rueda.
What is it about that region in terms of temperature or soil? What is it that works so well with the Verdejo grape?
Well, I mean, the Verdejo grape is native from Rueda. Obviously, nowadays other areas have planted it. But still, the Verdejo grape, where it gets the most, where it adapts the best, is Rueda, and it's a combination of both of the things you said, the soil and the weather. You know, the weather in Rueda is other areas that have planted Verdejo are warmer areas where, you know, the main advantage of Rueda is that it's in the high plain, it's gets especially in the nights during the summer, very cool nights with a big difference between the day and night, higher temperatures during the day. But still, even if it's hot, it's not too hot, which is also bad. So that balance is what makes Rueda the perfect place to grow Verdejo.
Ellen, and how would you define, as wine buyers, how would you define the North American market?
Well, as you said, you know, I've spent most of my career focusing on North America. I lived for 5 years in the U.S. I've been in Canada many times, and I think that the Verdejo grape buyers really like it a lot because they see the quality for the value. Also, the consumers, but still, people is unfamiliar with it. I think it's a grape with a lot of potential. I mean, I have thought that for many years and still hasn't got there. But I think it's a grape that when the majority of the consumers discover it, they will realize that for the money they get an amazing wine. You know, so what I have seen normally is that buyers are very interested in it. They're really looking for Verdejos, but still the consumer demand is not there. You know, it's when you do tastings, when I have done plenty of in-store tastings or wine dinners or stuff like that, people love it, but a lot of people is not familiar with it.
Well, that's kind of what we're doing here. And I knew about Verdejo before from my own studies, but I think I think part of the problem is that people get nervous about wine. They get nervous about trying new things. And though sometimes you just fall back into what you know, so you get Chardonnay or Pinot Grigio, and you don't realize there's all these other great grapes out there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
The difference between North America, Europe, and Asia, is there, and I know there's no one set generalization, but is there some differences in terms of people's buying habits between here in North America versus Europe versus Asia?
Absolutely. Well, in Spain, Verdejo has been growing in the last 5 years. Like, sales of Verdejo have been going like crazy, 5-8 years. And nowadays, I think that it was 2 years ago when it finally, for the first time, became the best-selling grape in Spain, overthrowing Tempranillo, which is huge.
Wow.
And Verdejo de Rueda was the best-selling grape and appellation, was best-selling than Tempranillos from Rioja or Tempranillos from Ribera del Duero. So in Spain right now, if you go to a bar or to a restaurant and you just ask for a white wine, 99% of the possibilities that they will give you a Verdejo. In Central Europe is our main market. You know, the Verdejo expansion internationally started in Germany, in Belgium, in Holland. So those are our main markets, not only for us, but for most wineries in the appellation. But of course, other areas like the UK or Switzerland are good markets. And after that, I would say the US is our biggest market. But in general, America is a growing market for us. Asia is the hardest, with the exception of Japan. In Japan, we sell a lot of Verdejo. But with the exception of Japan, most of the other Asian countries are very red wine oriented.
What would you tell people in terms of food pairing with, and again, you know, Verdejo, you can get young, you can get older, vintages, you can get some that are barrique, you know, fermented in barrique. But, you know, for your classic, like for your guys' wine, for your wines in Himenia, what would be the best food pairings to go with your wine?
Yeah, as you said, there are many styles of Verdejo. We can talk about that later. But for the classic and oak young Verdejo, you know, the pairing is, you know, obviously the best basic pairings, fish, seafood. In general, it goes amazing. Smoked salmon or that kind of stuff, the sushi. That's one of the things. That's what things when we started selling in the U.S., a lot of our first clients were Japanese restaurants because it goes very well with it. Also, some kinds of rices can go very well with Verdejo, and even because of the acidity it has and the mouthful sensation it gives, it can even go well with like white meats like duck or even chicken or stuff like that.
And in terms of style, I think what I found eye-opening about the grape was just if you age it for not that long, seven years, it can really turn and so much more complexity and just more mouthfeel. Even for ones that weren't very expensive, like $14, $15 bottle of Verdejo, if you give it 6-7 years, it really can transform in your glass.
Absolutely. For me, the Verdejo is probably with Chardonnay, the two more versatile white grapes because you can make all kind of wines. I mean, you can make young wines to be drink within the first 3 years of the vintage, but you can also ferment them in barrel and make, Burgundy style whites, which last for as long as you want. You know, last year I had the chance and the luck to taste the 2008 barrel fermenting Verdejo, and it was spectacular.
What's the harvest like this year? And also, how is everything there in Spain right now in terms of COVID?
So the harvest will happen. We will start, each winery will start whenever everybody feel like. But we will start next week. Next Thursday is when we have a schedule to start. Obviously, one day more, one day less will depend on the last visits to the vineyards. But our schedule right now is for next Thursday. And the vintage is looking very good because it has been, weather-wise, it's been a very balanced year. There has been no frost, no hail, no rains at the wrong time. It hasn't been an extremely hot summer. There has been a good difference between day and night. The winter was as cold as it should be. So right now, the potential we see for this vintage is excellent. We will see, but so far we think that this is going to be an excellent vintage. And at least for us, we will see what the appellation decides for the whole appellation. And in terms of COVID, obviously Spain is having a hard time. We are one of the countries that has been more affected. The wars passed. March and April were terrible. We had a very good evolution through June. In the summer, especially August, there's been a new increase in positive cases. Luckily, even though there is again like thousands of cases, we are not we are only having small numbers in the death count, which was the terrible part of March and April, and you know it's affecting a lot obviously the tourism, which is very important for Spain and the hospitality hospitality industry is taking the worst of this because obviously it's hard to go to a restaurant, especially inside in these conditions. There's a lot of restrictions depending on the areas. Valladolid, which is the main city near Rueda, well, the whole province of Valladolid, so Rueda is included, right now has for the next 2 weeks tougher restrictions, going back to a little bit of restrictions that were placed in May. You know, it's a little bit of a back and forth. And we are trying to adapt the best that we can. In terms of the winemaking or in the wine, I mean the process of making the wine, it really hasn't affected as much. We already were following the highest standards of food safety So in terms of hygiene, nothing changed. Obviously, we had to change, well, the security distances. The people who work on sales like me or administration or marketing, all these people is working from home.
If people see a bottle of Aminia, of your wine, what should people expect from a bottle of your wine?
Well, I mean, one of the things we focus a lot on when making our wines is on the on using our own native yeast to make our wines as unique as possible. So they can expect a lot of expression on the nose. And then we try to look for a great acidity. You know, it's a market acidity, but at the same time, very round. The kind of acidity that makes you salivate. I know that most people think that, you know, Verdejos are... Obviously, you can drink them by yourself and drink a whole bottle without realizing. But I think that it's a wine that, that is good to, you know, to sit on it, to see how it evolves on the glass, how it starts, you know, giving more aromas, how the mouthfeel sensation that it leaves, the acidity that it has also make you ask for food. So I think it's definitely a wine that even, you know, it's perfect for patio drinking. I think that it's better enjoy the, you know, with relaxing, having some food with it.
Luis, really, really appreciate you taking time to join us. I was a convert of your area and of your wines a year ago when I traveled there, and I hope people listening can get sort of can just try it. That's all you can really ask is people try the wines. I'd be amazed if people did and they weren't turned on by them, because there's some really good stuff you guys make out there.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And just a quick note, one of our wines is not under the brand Aminia, it's under a different brand. It's called Oinoz, spelled O-I-N-O-Z, Noz Verdejo. It's right now on the LCBO's online program. So you can order it online. So I really recommend everybody to give it a try.
Say the or spell the name again, and what's the difference between that and the Aminia?
Well, yeah, they come from different plots. It's basically a terroir thing. The Oinoz is the Aminia is the main brand, and Oinoz is a smaller brand that we use for a specific area in a town called Villalba de Adaja, from a plot that has a very high concentration of vine per hectare. So they compete a lot with each other and gives a lot of concentration to the wine. It's still an oak young, but with a lot of structure. And the name is Oinoz. It's spelled O-I-N-O-Z.
O-I-N-O-Z. Perfect. And you can find Luis's wines at the LCBO. Luis, all the best on the harvest. I'm glad you don't have any frost or hail. And I hope it's a good year. And, you know, just continued good health for you and for your country.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Same to you. Stay safe. Yeah. I'm looking forward to having the chance to meet you someday.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. My second interview is with Jorge Jerez, the export manager for Bodega Renea de Castile, but his way of pronouncing is far better. He's got the cool Spanish thing where he can roll his R's. I cannot. And it's an interesting interview about the general perception of the Verdejo grape. And a lot of it, especially the first part, is we talk about the winery and a lot of places in Rueda trying to get the word out about the Verdejo grape, about this white wine from northern Spain. And that's sort of the purpose of this entire podcast. That's one of the reasons why I'm doing some work with Dio Rueda, is to just spread the word about this region, because it's a great region. There's lots of great wines. There's lots of great expressions of this grape. It's a good alternative if you're looking to move away from Chardonnay or Pinot Grigio. And so, yeah, so here it is, my second interview with, again, from Bodega Renea de Castile, Jorge Herreras.
Well, the name was quite well pronounced, okay? So Jorge Herreras, that's my name. Mm-hmm. And the name of the winery is Bodega Reina de Castilla, which means the queen of Castile, the region of Castilla here, Castilla y León, okay?
There's no way I'm going to be able to roll my R's like that. Oh my God, you sound good. I sound so Canadian. I screwed that up entirely.
That's good. That's perfect. I'm sure that the listeners will be enjoying your pronunciation and my pronunciation as well.
No, they're going to make fun of me and they're going to be impressed with you. What do you think is the general perception of people outside of Europe of what the Verdejo grape is all about?
Well, I think that there is still a lot of work to do because, well, I ran the export of the winery for 11 years. I traveled to the United States a few times per year. And for example, the Albariño is very well known, and the Rías Baixas and the Albariño is very well known in the United States. And I think that we still have a lot of work to do. You know, I think that the perception that the foreigners can have of the Rueda or the Verdejo grape is that when they come to Spain, probably is the white wine that they are drinking the most. You know, because it's a wine and a grape that we can find almost in every restaurant, in every bar, and every corner here in the peninsula in Spain, you know, because, well, it's a wine that is are very versatile, affordable for every pocket, as we say here in Spain, you know. You don't have to pay too much to get a really good wine. And what I guess that this is the perception, you know, that when the people come to Spain, is the wine that they enjoy. And I guess that is the wine that they want to drink when they go back to their places, you know. So, but answering to your question, I think that we still have a lot of work to do to make a more promotion and so on, because I think that there are a lot of people that don't know us yet, I think.
And what needs to happen? Because you're right about mentioning, you know, the Albariños, the Rices Baixas of the world. Like, those names, I think, feel more familiar to North America. What needs to happen for Rueda so that it just becomes more of a common wine term for people in my continent?
Well, I guess it's a matter of promotion, you know. For example, I mean, the Gallegos, as we say here in Spain, the people from Galicia, basically there were a lot of immigrants in the 70s, 60s, and so on. There were a lot of immigrants from Galicia, and I think that that's why they have been more well known before us, you know. Now it's our time, I think. You know, we sometimes in Spain we don't know very well how to promote the good stuff that we have here in food, wine, etc., you know. So I think it's just a matter of promotion and time, you know. With the time, everything will come, you know. But it's the same comparing here in Spain Rioja to Ribera del Duero or other regions. Well, Rioja has also the influence of the France and so on. So, well, it's a matter of to know how to offer your positive aspects, you know.
What if you're going to tell people about your wine specifically?
Well, I think that the best definition of our wines is the balance. You know, it's we have wines with great balance between acidity, sugar. Are wines that are pull completely your mouth. You know, it's not a wine that you give a sip and it's already forget about that. You know, these are wines that after sipping, you keep it for 15, 20, 20 seconds, you know, and it gives you something, you know. It's a good combination of minerality, acidity, fruitness, the characteristic bitterness that it has the grape, you know. So, as I told you, I think that these wines are very versatile. I think is the word, you know, because you can enjoy in a terrace in a spring and summer, you know, like a funny wine to drink. But at the same time, this wine, or if you want to go a little bit higher in terms of quality or price, you can also enjoy in a formal dinner with seafood, etc., you know. So you can enjoy with tapas or pizza and something more informal for the everyday. But at the same time, if you go to the meeting with a friend or a dinner, etc., something more serious, I think that the people will have a very good impression of the wine. So,
and yeah, there is a range of styles. One thing that caught me, as you mentioned, the finish, fennel and like a burnt brown butter and a little bit of nutty notes. Like, those are some of the things I look for you know, sort of a slightly higher version of, and not very expensive still, but the slightly higher version of Verdejo. Those are the notes that I usually get.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I think that we are missing a little bit because of the needs of the market and so on, that sometimes it goes so fast, and the people in the hospitality and so on, they are demanding, especially here in Spain, we are in January and they are usually asking already for the new vintage. And actually here our winemaker, for example, we try to launch the wines into the market more or less in March, something like that, because we think that these wines gain in complexity, you know. With the pass of the time. But here, as I told you, the people in the restaurants, etc., it's January and they are already asking for the new vintage, you know. But well, so we need to find the balance. For example, here in our winery, we have the Reina de Castilla, the barrel fermented, which is a delicious wine. It's a limited edition. We produce more or less like 4,500 bottles per year, more or less, and it's an amazing. I wish we could produce more and sell more, because it's a wonderful, you know.
But it's also more expensive, and the oak and all of that comes into play. And those ones, and to everyone listening, if you can find one, I find the Barrique aged fermented Verdejo. It's a great wine for someone who loves Chardonnay, but maybe they want to try something different, and this is sort of their transition into Rueda. I'm curious, how did you get into wine? I'd like to know a little bit about your journey.
So talking a little bit about me, well, I'm an agricultural engineer. So that's my part of my background, of my education. Before working in the wine business, I was working in the quality and environmental protection and so on, because I also have a master degree on that. And then I made it was another master in international business. And that's why after some period working for the government of Castile and León, I was working in Poland. And well, after 1 year and a half doing the promotion for different companies of our region of Castile and León in Poland, I was in charge of the promotion of wines and food and so on during my stay in Poland. And it was after my return when this was a program of the government of Castile. So at my return, there were different opportunities. I started in the wine business because I like it during my period in Poland. I like it to organize the tastings and so on. And well, it was that was a little bit crazy, because I started in 2009, you know, so also there was a period of crisis as well at that time. And some people ask me if I was a bit crazy to start in such a competitive sector, because wine business is tough. There are too many wineries, too many labels, and so on. But I think that I have the tools and the weapons, as we say, and that's how I started. You know, it's good that I have this the background of the agricultural engineer, you know, because I know about the soils, about the production, etc.
And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about the history of the winery, if you could tell people a little bit about it.
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, the winery was founded in 2007 by a group of vine growers. Okay, so Reina de Castilla, it's a cooperative. And well, what we do here is to combine the tradition and the experience of the vine growers in the production of the vineyards, etc. You know, they are specialized in taking care of the vineyards. Therefore, we obtain a really good grapes, and combined with the new technologies, because the winery was founded in 2007, so already new technology and a new experience. And well, it, as I said, it was founded in 2007, 17 vine growers, and most of the grapes that we have are of the grape variety Verdejo, and we have also, we have the 90% of the production is Verdejo, and then we have Tempranillo for the production of Rosé, okay, and also Sauvignon Blanc, a little bit of Sauvignon Blanc. Okay, so well, we are in total a group of 12 people at the winery, and well, we are located in La Seca. It's something important. La Seca is here, they say, is the golden triangle. So it's La Seca, Rueda, and Cerrada, the other buildings. Okay, so we're at an altitude of 790 meters, more or less, so really good altitude, very good aeration, and well, it's a very good location for the production of the Verdejo.
What's it like traveling around the world selling Rueda and selling the Verdejo grape? Because it's very well known, obviously, in certain parts of Europe, but in other parts, in North America and Asia, it must be trickier.
Yeah, well, I mean, in general, here in Europe, as you said, we are selling very well, especially the Netherlands. It's a market that, despite of being so small, but we sell really, really well. And also Switzerland, for example, we are selling quite well, the wines. And in the United States, we are working, we have two importers. One of them is distributing the wine in Whole Foods. So we have a national distribution, which is really good. And the other one is located in the eastern part, so Virginia and so on. So they are covering in 4 or 5 states, and well, those markets are really good for us. I mean, Netherlands, Switzerland, United States also. So yeah,
I remember we were talking before, and I don't think it got saved, but you were telling me that Spain is not always the most confident about selling their own product or selling their own wine, and I was joking. I thought only Canada was the one who didn't have enough confidence in our product.
More than lack of confidence is that we don't know to sell very well, I guess. Italians, they know how, they are really good in marketing, not only in wines, but also in cars, in clothing, etc. You know, so Italians know very well how to sell. If we talk about France, because of the fact of being French, the people already think that they are really good wines. You know, so in Spain, sometimes I think that we don't believe enough in our product. I think because we arrive a little bit late to different places. You know, we are pioneers and we have a strong market here in Spain, but there are some markets, and I think that the wine is one of them, where we don't believe enough. I think that also because traditionally in the past, it was one part more of agriculture. And for us, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I was drinking wine already mixed with, we call here gaseosa. So it's like a soda. I remember when I was 10 years or 12 years old, I was drinking wine at home with my parents, you know. So for us, the wine is something normal. And traditionally, it was something else of the business of many people or in the a part of the agriculture, etc. And we have been selling in many places as a bulk. Maybe it was right. Sold in maybe to France, maybe to some other places, you know, but without giving this added value that we are giving nowadays, you know, like feeling proud of what we do.
Yeah, it's no longer bulk. It's small amounts. It's hand-picked. It's old vines. It's, you know, controlled fermentation temperature and all that sort of stuff. If you were out on a sales pitch or you're at a sales meeting and someone had to decide between your wine and a generic Pinot Grigio that floods the Toronto and Canadian market, why would you tell people this Verdejo is much better? And it's nothing against the Pinot Grigio, but for people looking for something different, why should they try Verdejo over a lot of the generic Pinot Grigio that we get here?
Well, I will just say that don't be shy and just feel free to taste, and you will see yourself. You can compare. I mean, many people ask me, "Oh, this wine is good," or "Which one is better?" I always say the one that is better is the one that you like.
Where would you like to see Reina in the next 10 years? Where are you hoping you guys are in the Spanish wine scene?
You mean the winery where we would like to see in 10 yeah. years? We are working strongly to make a brand, you know, because it's not easy. I was telling you before that it's really hard to build a brand when you are coming late. There are brands that have been in the market, Spanish brands that have been in the market already for 20 years, something like that. And actually, yesterday I was reading a report of the Dio Rueda that nowadays, in the times that we are living with the COVID, and I was reading that most of the consumers have been looking for brands that are already established in the supermarkets and so on. You know, so what I would like to see in 10 years is that we are one of those brands, you know, a strong brand, and we are working hard, offering good quality, being serious, doing business, that's the only way to do, I think.
People go for what's familiar and what they're comfortable with. People sometimes are nervous about trying a new wine, and again, that's part of this podcast, is to get people, don't be nervous, try it, and it should soon be part of your regular life. Yeah, you mentioned COVID. How is everything there now? How has it impacted the restaurants, the wineries, and yourself?
Well, it's been really tough, to be honest. Notice that the GDP of Spain, 60%, I think, it's because of the tourism. And, well, we have been in the lockdown since March, and the summer, basically, we haven't received any tourists, you know. So for the people, the owners of the restaurants and so on, it's been tough. And of course, for us also, you know, we have been selling thanks to the exports. We have been the worst months of March, April, May. The exports were working quite well, you know. So this helped us to continue with the cash flow and so on. But well, still, it's not enough. We have an important production at the winery, and well, you know, now this year now we have to combine. You know, it's not easy, because now actually we are already in the harvest. So what this year what we are going to do is to try to lower a little bit the yields, and well, trying to do the best that we can. You know, but yeah, it's not being easy. We will manage.
Where can they find, I know at the LCBO, what wines of yours can they find here in Ontario to try?
Our wine is El Bufon. It's ELBUFON, El Bufon, which means the jester. And well, this is the brand that we have available in the LCBO. And well, we really hope that the people to enjoy. This wine is 100% of Verdejo with 3 months on the lease. Okay. It's a wine that completely fools your mouth. Very complex, and well, I'm sure that the people will enjoy.
Jorge, thank you so much for being part of this. And I know there's some technical issues. That's technology. I'm in Toronto, you're in Spain, but I really appreciate it. I wish you nothing but the best. Good health for you and your family.
Well, thank you very much for your invitation to take part in your podcast, Matthew. And well, if you need anything else, feel free to ask me, and hopefully we will solve all the technical issues.
All the best, my friend.
Thank you, Matthew.
And we're back. The final interview, the winery is Bodega Xaya. I really mispronounced it, and I put a word in the middle. I don't know why I did that. The export manager is Lauren Gil, but his name is spelled G-I-L. So, of course, I go Gil, because, again, I'm an idiot. So the first part of the interview, we end with the ageability of the wines. And, again, I apologize. There's a bit of an abrupt end, and then I pick it back up again, and we pick it back up with the ageability. That's it for me after this interview. I ended after there. Again, really appreciate everyone checking out my interviews with Rueda, with these wineries. And remember to go on Dio Rueda, find out when Bruce Wallner, He's going to be doing his educational online wine class on September 22nd. And then October 5th, Angela Aiello, the Wine Night Instagram Live. She's fantastic. Thanks for listening. And here is my final interview.
We are joined by Lauren Gill, who's the export manager. And I'm going to mispronounce this, Lauren, so I'm going to need your help. Bodega Vinetos Shea. How bad did I do?
So it's, my real name is Lauren Gill, but you are allowed to say Gill. Don't worry about that.
Okay. Oh, wait a minute. That is so bad by me. That is so bad. Lauren Gill?
Yep.
All right. And so, okay, so we're getting through this slowly. I'm a dummy. How bad did I do with the winery name?
Yeah, the winery name is Bodegas Shaya. Is the name of the winery.
All right. And I guess, the first place I'd like to start is if you could tell people just a little bit about the region, Segovia, northern central Spain.
Yeah. So, I mean, the appellation of Rueda is part of three different provinces in Spain, in the central part of Spain, north of Madrid. So part of it is in Valladolid, which is quite near to the appellation Ribera del Duero. We also have the province of Ávila, but we are located quite near to Madrid, in the north of Madrid, in the province of Segovia. So let's say the southeastern part of the appellation Rueda.
Let's go this. I'd love to hear a little bit about the history of Shea. And also, I believe your winemaker, Belinda, came from Australia. I'd love to hear a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, because let me explain about my company, because we represent the fourth generation of the Gil family. Our base is located in Jumilla, which is southeast part of Spain, so around 70 kilometers inland from the Mediterranean, between the Valencia and the Andalusia. We are right in the middle. So we are the fourth generation. In fact, in 2016, we celebrated the 100th anniversary. And we have been doing the red wine in Jumilla, mainly with Monastrell, for many, many years. But during the last 20 years, we have been expanding to other different appellations in Spain. And in 2008, we arrived in Segovia. We arrived in Rueda. And since our main market has been all the time, has been the export markets, we met Belinda during one tasting in the United States. And we invited her to come to visit us. And she fell in love with the area and she agreed to work with us. She has a small winery in Australia, so she can produce wet wine here in Rueda during the summer. And, during the winter, they can go to Australia to produce their own wine.
And what was it? So you guys expanded. You were more doing red wine, Monastrell, or your company was. What was it about Rueda, and just what was the desire to get more into the Verdejo grape?
Yeah, because of course, the Verdejo is the main white grape in Rueda. Probably probably more than 90% of the. The grape in Rueda is white and is made of Verdejo. So we are doing in Jumilla with the Monastrell, the local grape, we are doing the same thing in Rueda with the local grape, which is Verdejo.
And what would you say is the overriding philosophy of your wine, of your Verdejo? What do you guys want to do with what's in the bottle?
Well, as we are doing in other areas, of course, first of all, you need to show the to introduce the local grape, you need to produce, first of all, let's say, very attractive, no high price wines to attract to call the attention of the consumer. So we started with the young wines, trying to get something easy to drink, not very complex. But we followed trying to show the high potential of the Verdejo. So we started with the young wines, but now we are also producing long aging white wine made of 100% Verdejo, coming for very old wines, pre-phylloxeric. In fact, let me tell you that we decided to hit the ground in the southeastern part of Appalachian, because in that area is one of the areas with the highest surface of pre-phylloxeric Verdejo. And for us, after our experience, one of the secrets to produce long-aging wines is you are doing with very old wines.
Do all your wines see oak, or some of them stainless steel, some of them see French oak?
Yeah, so For the young wines, we only use a stainless steel tank. But in case of the medium and the top wines, we keep for a few months in oak. Yeah.
Your top end wines, the interesting thing is when some people think Verdejo, they think simple summer sipper. But exactly. a hundred year old vine, low yield, hand picked French oak. That's kind of like the most, you know, that's kind of like what you would see in Burgundy or any other high-end white wine area.
That's true. In fact, let me tell you that, of course, we are very competitor of the French wines. But, you know, the first time I found the first distributor in France for our wines, when they came to visit us, they only wanted to taste the red wines because, of course, the quality of the red wines in Spain has improved dramatically for the last year. So I'm pretty sure that the quality is quite similar to the wine from Italy, France, whatever. In case of the white wines, they only wanted to taste red wine. But I told you, please try Sayahavis. And after tasting, they told me, Lauren, it looks like similar to the huge white Burgundy wine.
Yeah, that's impressive. Lauren, what is the perception of Spanish white wine?
In case of the young wines, for the lovers of a Pinot Grigio or Sauvignon Blanc, I would say that it's a good alternative for the Verdejo. In case of because if the young people they're looking for only something with a nice acidity, fresh, lively white wine, this is the one alternative. If you're looking for something more intense, more complex, we are a step down in comparison with the white wine from France and Germany, probably because of the climate, but we also are improving our winemaking style to get, you know, at the same level that the wine from France and Germany.
What is the ageability of your wines at Shaya?
Yeah, as I told you before, it depends on the age of the wine. So for sure, we are producing wines that I prefer people consuming 1 to maximum 3 years. But in case of Sayahavis, I would say that probably more than 10, 15 years. Because, I mean, we started in 2008, and I tasted a few months ago the first vintage, which was 2009, and the quality was excellent.
And sorry for if there was a bit of a technical difficulty there. Technology, I'm at my cottage. So things aren't always the best. But Lauren, we were talking about the ageability of your Verdejo.
Yeah, I would say that I said before that it depends mostly of the age of the vines. So in case of, young vines, they are able to produce young wines. I mean, this is like a good option for the young people. They like to drink something fresh with light acidity. But for the age wines, you need to work with the very old vines of Verdejo or any other grape. So in that case, because you obtain low yield, in that case, you obtain more complexity, and then you can keep longer in oak, which guarantee to get a long aging wine.
And what would you say are the characteristics of a Verdejo that has seen 5 to 8 years of age? What difference is it going to have that then versus the ones that are just released?
Yeah, it's just released, it's like I said before, like the typical profile of the Pinot Grigio or Sauvignon Blanc is a very elegant, let's say, tropical fruit, fragrant citrus notes, maybe stone fruit, white flowers. I mean, in general, it's a lively acidity. But when we talk about wines aging oak, then you get more, let's say, nuttiness, complexity, a little bit touch of oak, vanilla. And of course, when you match with food, it's totally different.
Lauren, I'd love to hear, I was doing a little bit of research, and you're a fourth generation winemaker at Gil, Gil family, not Gil.
Don't worry.
At Gil Family Wines, and your great-grandfather started it. Over 100 years ago. I'd love to hear about your journey and your family's influence in wine.
Yeah, well, I mean, in fact, I studied chemistry. So, and well, I remember my father was winemaker. So when I was a kid and I had to go to the winery to visit my father, I remember smelling wine since I was a kid. So all my life I've been smelling wine. So it's something inside me. But also, since during the last 15 years, I've been traveling all around the world I have the opportunity to taste wine from many, many different countries, different appellations. And of course, there, that opened your mind, trying to, you know, you see that how it, every place you can find lovely, lovely things. And the most important thing for me is that you have to work with a local indigenous grape in every place where you are. Also, since our company now, the family company, we own 10 wineries in different appellations, like in Rías Baixas Albariño, in Rioja with Tempranillo, in Aragon with Garnacha Grenache. Also, I have the pleasure to visit my country and taste my wines and taste the wine from other areas. But also when we visit the different appellations with our customers, I feel like a brand ambassador of my own country, showing the local grape in every place.
What are some of the reactions to your wine? Like, as you said, you've traveled all over the world. I imagine it's different in each country. I've heard the Netherlands loves Rueda. I'm curious just what are some of the other countries' reactions to your wines?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the Verdejo from Rueda, let's say the first market right now is Spain. The second market is United States. And we also have a big market in Russia, Canada, mainly in Quebec, Ontario, and also a little bit in British Columbia and Alberta. Also in Switzerland, Belgium, Netherlands, Japan, and up to 35 countries.
And you mentioned Russia. That's not one I expected.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, Russia is a very, let's say, mature market in terms of Spanish wines. I mean, it's a very long traditional market for the wine from Spain. I don't know exactly why, but for many, many, many years, Spain has been selling initially in bulk, but during the last 15 years, also in bottle wine, you know, for Russia. Yeah.
You talked about all the travel. How much is COVID going to impact what you do and just trying to get the message out there about Verdejo?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very important to visit the market, see the atmosphere, talk with the distributor, taste the competitors, and then when you show your wines, you pull the map of Spain, explain your traditions, your food, and your wines. And finally, it's a question of compare price and quality because everybody is in the market.
And I was talking to some other people, and the price, one reason why your prices aren't as high is, you know, because there's not a lot of pesticides, because a lot of the things that can cost money aren't part of the production of your Verdejo.
Yeah, I mean, of course. In fact, we are now involved into, because for example, in Jumilla, where I live, more than 80% of our vineyard, they are already organic, certified organic, organically. And now we are doing the same thing in Rueda, but we are doing with our own vineyards, and we prefer to sacrifice a little bit our markup, our margin, trying to maintain a very good price quality ratio for the customer, for sure.
10, 12 years from now, where do you think you will be in terms of your wines being known all over the world?
Of course, we follow trying to expand our wines to get so, you know, in more countries, for sure. That's the first key. I mean, we will follow showing young wines, but as I said before, we also want to get that the same position that we have for the red wines in the international market, to get the same image for the top wine like Shaya Javis, because right now it's a wine from France, one from Germany. They have probably a higher recognition, but this is our intention to, in a few years, to get on the same level.
What should people be looking for when they want to find your wines?
In Ontario right now, unfortunately, we only have the Honoro Vera Blanco, Honoro Vera White, which is this is our young wine. Young white wine lovers, I think this is one of the choice they can get. And I will, if they visit other provinces like British, like Alberta or in Quebec, SAQ, they can find also the Shaya and Shaya Javis, which are more, as I said before, more complex wines.
Lauren, I really appreciate you taking time to join me today. And all I'm trying to do on this pod is give people a little bit of a better idea of Rueda and the Verdejo grape and just the potential and what it can mean for you and your glass. So I really appreciate you taking time.
Thank you, Max. Thank you so much for having me. And of course, I invited the Canadian if they want to come to visit us. They are more than invited.
Oh, I was there a year ago. I'd love to come back again. It's just such beautiful country. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.